This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
On Feeding Time's food stories today, leading blogger Sean Young from eatdrinkkl.blogspot.com talks about his favorite meals of all time.
I love brains, I love liver, I love kidney, I love blood. So you feed me a plate of fried blood sausages with potatoes and eggs, and you know that could be my last dinner before I'm sent to be hung or anything.
Later on, he gamely undertakes a quickfire challenge on his favorite restaurants of the moment.
You know, I used to love Senses at KL Hilton. I think that was outstanding, and I haven't quite found one to replace that yet. So at this point, I don't know. I think the independent restaurants is where the excitement these days really is at, and not the hotels.
But first up, here are a few of my Penang favorites that I'm going to share with you. Okay, so I have been going to Penang a fair bit recently to visit my parents. And usually when I go there, I get so immersed in fried kway teow and Hokkien mee and wonton mee that there really isn't room for me to explore much else because the time that I'm there doesn't really allow me to do that. But I've decided to step out of my comfort zone. I've decided to share a few of my favorites that are not Hokkien mee, not fried kway teow and not wonton mee. So herewith, first up, Ochien. Now, Ochien is very Penanga in nature. It's also from Malacca, and it comprises an eggy omelette that's fried with rice flour batter to give it that really sticky, snotty consistency, and also with some local oysters that are either fatter or smaller depending on the availability of the oysters at said time. There are also some chives and the chili garlic sauce that accompanies it and really heightens the flavor of this Ochien. Now, Ochien is widely available, but like white shirts, not all Ochiens are created equal. So you can go to one place and try an Ochien and it really doesn't lend much to the imagination, or you could go to a top place like the New Lane Coffee Shop at the corner of McAllister Road that does the Ochien really, really well. For only a paltry 4.50 ringgit a plate, you're going to get an Ochien with nice juicy oysters, an omelette that's sticky but not too sticky and not overly so, and a fairly competent chili that will more than serve the purpose. But if you are a purist, and I hope you are, then you should make tracks to the Ochien specialist that's located at Lebo Carnarvon. Now this guy, he's been in business for several decades, I don't know how many, but at least two and maybe more than three even. And his version has got amazing wok hei. It really is irresistible because he's got also this amazing chili and garlic sauce that intensifies the flavor of the omelette. And the omelette also has really nice crispy fried edges that is a perfect contradiction to the creamy juiciness of the oysters. It's probable that one plate will not suffice, although at 10 ringgit a plate, you may not want to indulge too much. This guy is located at Kedai Kopi Seng Tor, that's located at 160 Lebo Carnarvon. And the other restaurant that I told you about, the New Lane Coffee Shop, is just on the corner of Lebo Baru and Jalan McAllister, and is open nightly from 6 p.m. The next dish that I also really haven't eaten so much of in recent years but should go back to is Penang Laksa. Now, Penang Laksa has been having its moment in the sun at the moment because it was in 2011, I think, or 2012, voted number 7 in the world's top 50 best foods by CNN. And that is no mean feat because there are a lot of pretty good things to eat in the world. And it was cited as Penang Laksa versus just general laksa. So since then, people have been thronging to Penang to try Penang Laksa. Penang Laksa differs from other kinds of laksa because it's got a piquant fish stock. You use a fatty kind of fish, usually mackerel, and then you add tamarind, you add cucumber, you add chilies, you add pineapple, fresh mint leaves, onions, and torch ginger. And what you have, a resulting flavor sensation that you just is so memorable and really not very easy to replicate. Now, for Penang Laksa, there are a lot of places that Penangites would argue offers the best. But the one that is widely considered very popular is in Balik Pulau. That's not near anywhere, you know, because it's about an hour away by car from Georgetown. It's a destination trip, but I think it's well worth the hike. Because here, the two ladies, they sell both Asam Laksa, which is the Penang-style laksa, and Lemak Laksa, which has a thick coconut gravy. It's only 3.50 ringgit a bowl, not like KL prices. And the Asam Laksa is great because the noodles have a springy texture, which makes it a perfect dance companion for a soup that has all the flavor spectrums. It's sweet, it's very sour, and it's also very salty. They also throw in this Heko shrimp paste, which, as you know, has a very, very strong flavor that you either love or you hate. So if you're not sure about it, maybe ask them to serve it separately. But if you are a Heko aficionado, you're going to love this laksa because it really is replete with the flavors of the Heko. I suggest start with Asam Laksa, maybe finish with the Lemak Laksa, because if you start with the Lemak Laksa first, you're not going to be able to taste Asam Laksa afterwards. These ladies are located at Nan Guang Coffee Shop in 67 Jalan Balik Pulau. They open from noon to 3:30 p.m. and they're closed on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, so do take note. Now, if you want to have a dessert, you could go for Chendol, but Ice Kacang is quintessentially Penang in nature and it's the classic dessert for all Malaysians. In the blazing tropical heat, what better way to cool down than with an ice kacang where the ice shavings are married with nuts and sweet corn and evaporated and condensed milk, fruit, jellies, coconut milk, syrups, and even gula melaka. Now, my favorite ice kacang stall are the hawkers. They used to be hawkers. They used to have a stall in Swa Tau Lane, but now they've been moved into a very sterile food court that's a little bit void of personality, but never mind, let's not go there. These guys inherited the business from their grandfather, who started it in 1923, they're the Lee brothers, and since then, they've been representing Penang at the Adelaide Food Festival for more than 2 decades because their ice kacang rocks. They have more than 30 varieties of ice kacang, which is quite stunning because ice kacang is a fairly simple dish when you consider it. And they've included ingredients like sasi syrup, there's mango, there's watermelon, sometimes there's red beans, grass jelly, even palm seeds. So their ice kacang is not just a simple ice kacang, it is a thing of beauty and a thing to marvel at. Their ice kacang is now located at New World Park Food Court in Lorong Swa Tau, which is off Jalan Burma. Their store is called Lee Brothers Ice Kacang. They open from 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. And if you want to call one of the Lee brothers, the phone number is 012-492-8804. Today on Food Stories, we have Sean Yeung, mastermind and genius behind Eat Drink KL, the blog that has all Malaysia flutter because you seem to know exactly what restaurants are going to open before they open. How long have you had this blog now?
It's been 6 years running. And there's been a blog post every single day for those 6 years.
Every single day?
Yep. Right now we've got about 2,500 restaurants reviewed on Eat Drink KL.
And you single-handedly write all of them. I know that you don't have assistance in terms of writing and coverage. So that's a lot of blog posts.
It is, yeah. It's about an hour per day.
And now you say that you've also quit your full-time gig to focus on it.
Which helps, yeah. So that means I just had to wake up at 11 o'clock and as soon as the restaurant opens, I could be there.
And who pays the bills then?
I do, but we'll probably talk about that later, right?
Okay, so we'll talk about the financial aspect later because today, actually, we want to find out about the man behind the blog, really. What got you into this sort of everlasting love with food?
Well, my family enjoyed food. I mean, we were from Malacca. So in Malacca, I grew up loving popiah, you know, filled with crunchy pork lard. And I loved the laksa with those fat, juicy cockles, the ochen. So yeah, we always had an enduring love for food. I remember my best memories were around the family table and we would be eating the food that my aunt had brought back or that my aunt had made in the kitchen.
But did your mother cook?
No, my mom's not as good a cook as my grandmother.
But did she have any interest at all or not at all?
She was more interested in the eating process, like me.
Just like you.
Yes.
And your grandma was a good cook though.
My grandmother made the best nasi lemak that I've still ever had in my life and the best chicken curry with potatoes.
What was so special about her nasi lemak?
I think it was really made painstakingly throughout the day. So it really had a lot of aroma to it. It had that moistness, that freshness that you just can't quite get these days from your average restaurant's nasi lemak.
So her nasi lemak is chicken curry or the dry curry?
It was, well, she, you know, depending on what she would have, she could have chicken curry on one day or on fried chicken on a day, but it was up to her.
So who inherited all her recipes since your mom is not a cook?
Nobody. I haven't had my grandmother's nasi lemak in about 15 years now, and she doesn't make it anymore because she doesn't cook these days.
You need to grab it from her before it's too late.
I probably should.
I have a vested interest in asking this, as you may have guessed.
Right.
So, tell us about some of your other food memories from childhood, you know, growing up in Malacca. Mm-hmm. What were some of the most enduring food memories that you had that gave you the epiphany to realize that, look, a life in food is what I'm after?
I think it's the hard work and the love that actually goes into making the food. I remember my other grandmother, she used to make a sambal and she'd pound it with the pestle and mortar, and you know the effort it takes to make a dinner. You know, you'd be slaving from morning to the evening just to prepare a feast for the family. So for that, I gained a respect not just for food but for the people who make the food.
That's definitely true. In the old days, there was no such thing as pre-made curry powders. Mm-hmm. You had to pound it everything from scratch.
Right.
But Terry Durack, you know, the writer, the Australian food writer, he said his food epiphany was the moment he had his first ever oyster. The moment he tasted his first ever oyster, he fell head over heels in love with food and knew that food was his calling.
Right.
Was there any such point for you?
Yeah, I think it was in 2002. I was in Venice, and this was the first time I had been to Italy, and we had done Rome, but Venice was where I really tasted the freshest seafood, the best pasta, and you know, I just couldn't get enough of it. So that was the point where I realized that, okay, I just want to go all out and just continue eating and just explore, and just it's a continuous adventure, because you never know exactly what you're going to get next when it comes to restaurants. Basically, that built up my passion for trying to look for different chefs, different restaurants, and seeing how their personalities come through in their food.
But I understand that you don't actually cook, right?
I can't cook. I don't own a microwave, I don't own an oven, I don't own a kettle, I don't own any heating apparatus at home.
So you don't actually own any cooking equipment even?
I'll put it this way, you can't even cook instant noodles at my home because I don't have a kettle. I have nothing to boil water with.
So if there's a war and the restaurants are shut, that's the end of Sean Young.
Right, yes, that is.
Why did you never have a curiosity to learn how to cook? If you love to eat, wouldn't it at some point in that evolution occur to you that maybe I should learn how to cook?
I've always admired those who can cook, and when I watch movies, and there are a lot of movies about great cooks. There's this movie called Big Night. It's from the 1990s.
Yes,
it stars Stanley Tucci, and it shows the effort that they go through in building an Italian restaurant and all the effort that goes into preparing the food. So to me, that's a bit daunting. I just know that that's not where my talent lies. I'd be hopeless in the kitchen. I wouldn't be able to, you know, chop properly, so I figure, why bother?
How do you know you can't chop properly if you've never tried?
I don't want to risk losing a finger, so...
Oh, goodness me. So not even a little bit curious?
I wouldn't mind attending a cooking class, but, you know, at the same time, I'm not really interested in it.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. I spent most of my childhood telling people that I was a great eater, so I had no need to learn how to cook. But as the years progress, I find I get more and more curious, and now I cook quite a fair bit.
Right.
So it's interesting to see someone who has a similar background, in the sense that we both write about food, we both talk about food a lot, to see that you're so diametrically opposite and absolutely just don't want to even go into the kitchen.
I think I love knowing about the process of how the food is prepared, but when it comes to actually taking part in it, I guess that's something that, you know, just doesn't resonate with me.
So what happens when people criticize you and say, well, how can you write about food if you don't know how to cook it? What's your response?
Right. I think that it's two totally opposite things. One can know how to cook well and know the techniques, but not know how to really assemble everything, not have that kind of palette where you'd really be able to discern whether something works or doesn't work. And while I'm not saying that I have an incredible palette, at the same time, I feel like I'm more confident in recognizing what really good food is and discerning, you know, the little things that elevate something from good to great.
So therein lies your true talent, as you earlier let slip. Is that what you're saying?
I would like to think so.
And how do you know that you have a great palate?
It's probably difficult for me to really explain, but I think that just after all these years, probably for the first 6 years, I was just eating and throughout that process of experience, I think that's where you gain the ability to recognize things. It's probably not different from, you know, I mean, food is one thing, but it can be, you know, other things, the appreciation of art, appreciation of, you know, many other art forms.
Well, so what you're essentially saying is that, like Malcolm Gladwell said in his book, what was the book called? Outliers?
Mm-hmm.
Where he says that if you have the benefit of time and time, enough time doing the same thing over and over again, you will become very skilled at it. Right. And Bill Gates, he said, wasn't because he was such an amazing genius, but because he had this crucial 80,000 hours, one of those things that tipped him over and gave him that head start over everyone else, just as Beatles playing in crap bars in Stuttgart, played it over and over again and did so much of the hours and the road that they actually, it tipped them over. So are you saying that that's what happened to you, that by virtue of the fact that you ate and ate and ate, that the knowledge itself imprinted itself on you?
More or less. I think I'm a slow learner. I'm not a quick learner. I'm not a, you know, I take time to absorb things. So, you know, after 12 years of really, really, you know, being passionate about this and looking things up. I mean, I speak to chefs, you know, I speak to others who are equally passionate about food, and you learn to slowly understand from them as well. I mean, I have had the wisdom of people who know a lot better about wine or about French food, and they've spoken to me and they've helped to explain, you know, things that helped me to then grasp when I finally experienced those food.
So did you have actually even study or just understand different techniques, learn different techniques, understand that this is how the food arrived at your plate?
Yeah.
You did do that?
Yeah.
So, okay, let's go back to the epiphany in 2002. Mm-hmm. Prior to that, had you any inkling that food was going to be your life?
Yeah, before that, my main passion has always been movies and music. So I'm still big on movies. I watch about 60 movies a month. I still make time for that. So food is something that takes up more time these days. But I'd say that, you know, if I couldn't eat out, if I just had to eat the same thing every day, I could still survive.
Now, that's a contradiction.
Yeah, I don't know how to really put it, but...
So, you live to eat, but if at a push, you could also eat to live.
Yeah, maybe I've reached this stage. Maybe it's just a phase. I don't know.
Oh boy, that's a scary thought. Okay, next up, Sean is going to talk a little bit more about some of the most interesting meals he's eaten and his latest project, which is the ebook from eatdrinkkl.blogspot.com. This is Feeding Time with Faye on BFM 89.9. Okay, I'm here with Sean Jung for his food story today on Feeding Time. Sean's been talking about how actually he actually doesn't know how to cook, despite the fact that he's an ardent eater.
Don't rub it in. Don't rub it in.
And at a push, you also just eat to survive, which I'm still reeling from, actually, because to me, that is just inexplicable. Because if you love food, there should be no time out, right?
I think I'm reaching this point where, you know, you think about it and food is food. I mean, it's great, it's delicious and everything, but... maybe it's a midlife crisis as well. I don't know.
Yeah, probably. Actually, I think I did go through a little bit of a phase of food fatigue at one point where I was kind of, well, you know, it's just another meal. But you've got to get over the hump. You've got to get over the hump, because if you lose your passion for food, you lose your joie de vivre. I am seriously convinced.
Yeah, I'm not jaded about it, but I recognize as well that, you know, the pleasure that food can give you, you know, there is a limit to what it gives you.
That's true. It cannot become your whole life. It cannot consume you in such a way that you are addicted to it and you can't think of anything else. Talk me through some of the most memorable meals you've had and why were they memorable?
Gosh, I'm really bad at specifics, but you know, when I get a question like that, the things that leap to my mind, well, this might be kind of gross, but they tend to be animal parts. I love brains, I love liver, I love kidney, I love blood, so... You feed me a plate of fried blood sausages with potatoes and eggs, and you know that could be my last dinner before I'm sent to be hung or anything.
Your last dinner would be awful.
My last dinner, if before I'm hanged, I would probably request a plate of awful.
Wow, that's insane.
Back in America, we used to have this pork liver satay, and that was one of my favorite things ever.
Pork liver satay.
Yeah.
What about some other? What awful meals that you've had?
Well, in KL, we tend to not really get them that much. I remember that I had a testicle steamboat, and that was pretty good. It was tasty. It was a bull testicle steamboat.
Oh, I was going to say, whose testicles were they?
And I brought, I remember my first experience with kidney. It was in London, and we ordered a plate of kidney, not knowing how large it'd be, and they served us this gigantic platter full of kidney, and you know, by the end of it, we were like, okay, we're never going to eat kidney ever again.
In Europe, any interesting, well, awful bits that you've eaten?
Well, the blitz sausage that still haunts my dreams, it's from Madrid. That's the one that's my go-to place when I think of something that's really greasy and, you know, comforting.
What is it about offal that so appeals to you?
I think it's the texture, because I like, for example, a fried pig brains in butter. And, you know, you just get this texture, which it just melts in your mouth. It's so creamy. It's unbeatably so sensual on your as you eat it.
Okay, so there's a little bit of Hannibal Lecter in you after all.
Well, I probably shouldn't go on about my cravings for someday trying human flesh, right? But I actually do have that as well.
Are you serious?
Yep. There have been times when I've met up with people and they ask me like, what would I want to try someday? And I told them that if I could possibly try human flesh, I would. But I wouldn't kill someone to do it. What I say is that if you would volunteer to, let's say, cut a slice away from your body and, you know, pass it over to me, I'd be happy to take it.
Well, that's an unnerving thought. First time I've ever heard a confession like that on air.
Right. I mean, it's probably pretty tasty. I'm betting that prepared the right way, human flesh could be as good as, you know, pork, as good as...
Well, it's been said that
it has
pork
those elements.
Has the closest consistency to human flesh. Yep. And in fact, pork skin has been used for human grafts, skin grafts, because mm-hmm. it's so similar. Mm-hmm. So are you still curious now that you know that it just tastes like pork?
It's not about curiosity, but it's more about knowing that it's probably pretty tasty and just wanting to enjoy it then. Just one finger, that'll be fine.
Just one finger?
Yeah.
Not a lot of meat in one finger.
That's okay. I'm not greedy.
Let's go away from your cannibalistic instincts for a little while. Not put everyone else off. So have you travelled everywhere around the world, or most places around the world, or some places?
I have a love for Europe. So whenever possible, most of my vacations, I try to explore as many European countries as I can.
What was the last trip you made?
It was Greece.
Greece, oh.
Yeah, Santorini, Athens, magical.
Wow. Because before I went to Greece for the first time, I was never really impressed by the sort of Greek food that was overseas. It was very stereotypical, tara masalada, that kind of thing. But when I actually went there and realized how fresh and how unadorned the food was, the seafood was plain and it was just pristine, you know, in its unadulterated state. Mm-hmm. Did you find the same thing?
I did. I mean, all they needed was to just, you know, grill it and put some olive oil and, you know, some vegetables. And it was a great meal on its own. We went to this place where it was run by this fisherman, and he caught calamari, and he, you know, told us that this was the best calamari in the universe. And of course, we scoffed at it. We were like, okay, we've eaten calamari a lot of times, but this was really the best. He fried it, he grilled it, you know, everything was perfect about it.
What was so good about it?
I guess it was the flavor of it and the texture of it. I think too often we find calamari that's, you know, it's either just chewy or it's bland, it's limp. But this was really exploding with flavor, and the way he prepared it, you could tell that he had been doing this, you know, since he was a kid, and he was probably about 40-something. So, you know, it's once again experience.
He's handled a lot of calamari.
Yeah.
So in all your European travels, what are some of the meals that have really stood out for you, and why?
Well, when I think about the perfect lunch, I'll always think about this restaurant in Amsterdam. It was set in a former greenhouse, and so they converted it into a restaurant where, you know, you have all these natural light streaming down from you. There you have a garden nearby where they would pluck all the vegetables and the fruits for the day's meal and make the salad. And it was just a place where you go into there and you feel refreshed, you feel rejuvenated. And that, I think, is one of the great things about a restaurant. You can go into the restaurant feeling down, and after you come out, if you've had a great meal surrounded by, you know, a great team, you just come out feeling alive again.
Yeah, energizes you, right? The whole experience.
It revives you. You know, it lifts your spirit.
And are you a bit of a Michelin whore? Are you one of those people that like to go around eating in Michelin restaurants?
No, that doesn't really count much for me. I mean, I try to visit them just to experience them, but I find that my, you know, the memories that linger with me the longest aren't at those restaurants.
That's true. I really agree with you. It's the little ones, it's the little mayampara restaurants, the offbeat fishermen that really resonate.
Yeah. I think that you can still appreciate the amount of work they put into it, and you can see why they earn those stars. But at the same time, the ones that, you know, really pack a punch are the ones that hobby surprising. It's the element of surprise as well. You go in expecting not much, but you come out, you know, really seeing that the craft that goes into the cooking.
Yeah. The diplomacy that you always display in your blog is obviously very evident here. That's why people love your blog, because you don't just pan people for no reason. Mm-hmm. You look behind the rationale, and I like that. You know, I like that you do that even when you're speaking.
I think it's easy to be cool, because you look at a lot of social media comments.
That's right.
It's easy for someone to say that, oh, the food here is nothing to shout about, or the food here is blah or meh. You know, those kind of comments undercut what the people behind the kitchen are trying to do.
Exactly. They're trying to earn a living, you know.
Yep, right.
So what's next for you now that you have no job and nothing to worry about?
Well, one of the projects I started late last year was an ebook of restaurant recommendations. I found that I had a lot of readers who were emailing me and asking me for a good place to take their parents, to take their boyfriend, to take their girlfriend. And I just figured that, okay, I might as well just compile a list of my 100 favorite places. These aren't the 100 best places in KL. I wouldn't stake a claim that, you know, these are the 100 best restaurants, but there are 100 restaurants that I like, that I know people like.
And how has the response been to this ebook?
It's been good. I had a cafe owner who told me that her cafe was listed among the first 100. And she told me that she met a retired couple who had been to a cafe, and they said that they had been eating their way through the list of 100. And she didn't get their names, and I don't know who they are, but in the off chance that they are listening, I'd just like to thank them and say that, you know, I appreciate it.
That's so gratifying, isn't it? When you actually see that people, they take that to heart and they're actually making a journey of it.
It is. I mean, it is genuinely humbling, because, you know, I feel in the end, we are all, none of us are real, you know, can claim to be real experts. In the end, it's just about matter of personal preference. I know a lot of restaurants that I like that other people don't like, and I can't blame them for not liking it. I can see their point. But I think that it's nice when you have people who enjoy the same restaurants that you do and who say that, yes, you know, I really liked the banh mi there, or I really liked, you know, the ayam pongteh there.
That's true. Yep. It's a subjective experience, but it's great when other people decide to come along on the ride with you.
Right. At this point, I also have a weekly email newsletter that readers can subscribe to for free. It contains all the stuff that you'd expect from a newsletter, promotions, you know, new openings. And there's going to be a mobile app that comes out from Eat Drink KL, hopefully by the end of October or November.
Why haven't I subscribed to it yet, Sean? You better put me on the list now.
Okay. You need to subscribe to it yourself.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, best of luck with everything. It bodes well for us diners in KL that you are now free to devote all your time to discovering new eating places for us.
Thanks so much, Faye.
Next up, Sean is going to be undertaking a quick fire challenge on his favorite places to eat around Malaysia. Okay, so I've got Sean from Eat Drink KL sweating bullets in front of me because I'm putting him under the pumps now by asking him about his favorite places to eat in the various culinary genres. We'll start with an easy one. Favorite Italian?
Favorite Italian. I think right now Strato at Troika Sky Dining is doing really good work. You know, it's pastas. The founders have, you know, really done the whole Italian menu justice. Pastas, pizzas.
I gotta say, I agree with you on that one. So, what about favorite Japanese food?
Sushi Hinata.
Sushi Hinata?
Yeah, because their sushi there, you can tell that, you know, these guys who run it, they are masters at their art. You know, everything from the rice, the texture of the rice, to the freshness of the fish, the types of fish, it's all perfection. The thickness of the fish, it's flawless.
What about your best breakfast place?
That's a tricky one, because, you know, that probably changes from month to month, because there are so many, you know, new brunch places and caffeine places coming up. But I think one of the ones that have done really well for the past few years is the Red Bean Bag at Solaris Tutamas. And, you know, that's a place where it's got great vibes. It's got this Melbourne-inspired, team where it really works.
And they've also churned out some great baristas who have now gone on to open their own places.
Right, yeah. So it's a place that inspires people.
Yeah, definitely. What about your favorite supper joint?
Supper joint. Well, I wish more places opened late at night. I haven't been for this supper yet, but I hear that there's this restaurant called Thai Camp at Petaling Jaya that is going to be launching a Thai supper menu. So you can come there at midnight and enjoy a lot of Thai street snacks.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Which brings us to favorite Thai restaurant.
Favorite Thai restaurant. It's probably a tie between Era 1 at Kota Damansara and Compassion at Damansara Kim. They're both inventive. They both take Thai food to, you know, it goes beyond the usual green curry mango with sticky rice staples.
Agree. Era 1, just subliminal. It just takes you to new heights and the flavors are so subtle and delicate. Mm-hmm. Couldn't agree more.
Right.
Okay, what about favorite French restaurant?
French restaurant, La Vie en Rose. I think that the setting there is perfect, and it, you know, and the guys who run it as well, you know, they are people who know French gastronomic traditions. They respect it, and it's no nonsense French food.
And the best part, it doesn't look like it tries too hard. You know,
yeah.
The setting is casual, it's comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Favorite hotel restaurant at this moment?
You know, I used to love Senses at KL Hilton. I think that was outstanding, and I haven't quite found one to replace that yet. So at this point, I don't know. I think the independent restaurants is where the excitement these days really is at, and not the hotels.
Yeah, definitely. The glory days of the hotel restaurant is sadly over.
Yeah.
Okay, finally, favorite place to eat at this point in time, regardless of location, regardless of culinary genre, regardless of price.
You know, I probably got to tip it back then to, it goes full circle, back to my Malaccan heritage. I think of Simply Mel's. It's a Malaccan Portuguese restaurant in Bangsa South where you get this, where Auntie Mel, you know, she's been cooking for decades as well, and she does great ayam pongte, kapitan chicken. You know, she does things where her grandmother, her mother, you know, recipes that were handed down to the generations.
Definitely, and she's coming out with a cookbook now, so we got to get our hands on that one.
You should, since you can cook.
Oh yeah, that's right. No use for you.
Yep. You'll just find me eating there.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Sean, for your food story.
Thanks, Faye.
Best of luck with Eat, Drink, KL and with the ebooks. Guys, if you want to subscribe to Sean's newsletter or download his ebook, which is downloadable for free, go to eatdrinkkl.blogspot.com. .blogspot.com. Thank you, Sean.
Thanks, Faye.
Big thanks to Sean for his very interesting outtake on food. If you want to find out more about the show, don't forget to follow us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/BFM Feeding Time. Or follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Miss Koo. That's MISSKHOO for more information about the show. Till next Saturday, this has been Feeding Time's Food Stories on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.